Last week, the sermon was about forgiveness. And I realized I left out something on the second perspective of forgiveness that I thought ties in nicely to today's sermon about independence. And that was, we gave three perspectives on forgiveness. The first perspective, I just quickly review them. The first perspective was what was entitled A Western Psychological Perspective, which focused on the other, that you needed to forgive the other, and the other was a primary person in the process of forgiveness. The second perspective was one in which you live your life as healthy as you possibly can, and one day you discover forgiveness. The third was more of one of a spiritual meditation, where that you work to detach from the values of life, a particular worldview, until you enter into some sense of light, some sense of oneness, where you kind of burn away everything about your life and you are one within yourself, so that when you come back and re-enter the world, so to speak, that you are not attached in the same way to the things that require forgiveness. You come back anew. The second perspective is the one that I'd like to draw our attention back to, because that perspective, the one in which forgiveness happens, and forgiving is a process, but forgiveness happens in a larger process of taking care of life. So you have two processes, the one that's about forgiveness specifically, I suppose, but then you also have another process of taking care of your life in general. And as you take care of your life in general and work on your spirituality and work on relationships and such, one day, because of that health, you discover that forgiveness has occurred, sometimes without even paying it much attention. That's the same way with healthy revolutions. A healthy revolution is a process within a process. And if it becomes other than that, then there's a danger. If you remember in the reading today, I believe it was the third or fourth stanza where it talked about if the search for freedom or if the process of freedom gets stifled in tradition, it gets muddied like water, and the light and the life of freedom no longer occurs. Well, the same thing happens during a revolution. Have you ever heard or talked to others about wondering why, when revolutions occur and really regimes that are oppressive are overthrown, and then within a period of 15 years or 10 years or 2 years, it seems like the same exact thing is happening again? That the revolutionaries are now the oppressors, and we need new revolutionaries to overthrow the oppressors, and then later on they become the oppressors? Well, that's because that two-tiered process got lost. See, the revolution occurs in a process of a sense of freedom and to throw off the yoke of bondage. And then there's a particular worldview and a particular understanding to that way, to that revolution. Then when that revolution gets in power, it's not necessarily worried about the freedom of the masses again. It's worried about staying in power. And so then you have the same process all over again. And in the in our particular revolution, United States of America, the formation of our nation, some of the founding fathers, excuse me, but fathers, were aware of that. And it seems as if some were not aware of that. And I'll get to that in a minute, but before I get to that, I would like to say we Unitarian Universalists today, not prideful in a sinful way, but prideful in a way that fills us, we ought to have a particular pride about ourselves today. Because the tenets that we find in the Constitution, the tenets that we find in the Bill of Rights, have their roots in our faith ancestors, in the Socinian community. Our faith ancestors is where we find the tenets of the freedom of this nation. I was looking up the forerunners to the Declaration of Independence, to our civil liberties, and to the Constitution, and they stop at John Locke. But if you look, when they went into the library of John Locke, you'll find the Socinian books. And the Socinian books are our faith ancestors. And they were birthed out of a community which during the religious wars during Europe, the Catholics were in charge, the Lutherans were in charge, the Calvinists were in charge, and then they would literally have armies and come and kill people, then they would be in charge, and then they would be in charge, and every 30 years, 20 years, 10 years, whatever it might be, you would not only have a change in religious perspective, but you would also have a change in who owned the property. So that's why when we look at these documents, we find religious tolerance, but we also find issues of property. So there really was no stability at that particular point. And so the Socinians and that community, their struggle was for religious tolerance. And they coordinated with some of the people who owned the land, the gentry of their day, and they started working out contracts and started working out statements such as religious tolerance is a birthright. Religious tolerance is what we need for liberty and freedom. The right of property has to have continuity through time and has to be protected by law. And this is in the 1540s. So, some of the words were, because of this, with the freedom to dissent is not only the right, but also the fundamental right on which is based the integrity of the freedom of the Republic. These are Socinian thoughts. These are Unitarian thoughts. It is the foundation of the unity of nations, the right to dissent. It is the foundation that of the Republic is to guarantee the equality of all citizens. And then I got to thinking about this particular sermon, and I thought I would do something like this. I would say, and we pulled the boot off the back of our neck from King George. And somebody would say, well, wait a minute. It was really the John Company that had bypassed the taxation and was actually usurping the power of the entrepreneurs and was kind of doing a Walmart and driving out small businesses. It just wasn't King George, right? And put that in. And I'd say, well, okay, point taken. And then I'd say, well, the equality of all people. And then a woman would stand up and say, well, wait a minute. That didn't include me. That didn't include me. And then I'd say, well, okay, the equality of all people. And then an African-American person would stand up and say, well, wait a minute, that didn't include me. See, this is why it's so important to understand that in a revolution, you've got to maintain the concept of the two processes. That one is the immediate context, the historical context of that day, but there are larger ideals. And if you get lost in the historical context of that day, you forget the living, the nature of the Constitution and of civil liberties and how they live through time and they have to grow and they have to move through time. We just can't lock them into time because if we would have, we would not have been able to have the suffrage movement. Civil rights, we would not have been able to have that. The two processes of revolution. What does a revolution really do? In your own lives, personal revolutions. Have you ever had a struggle where you were wrestling with self-tyranny? Self-oppression? Have you ever struggled with an addiction, or have you ever struggled with a bad habit? You've struggled with self-tyranny, self-oppression. Have you ever struggled with a community where you felt there was somebody trying to drive a bill through your city halls or through the county commissioners that you know would cause disruption and harm in your community? And you went and said no to that, and you push that back. Or a nation as a whole. Like, as a matter of fact, we are undergoing the type of revolution today in our nation. The majority of the people want particular things. Healthcare, particular type of energy policy, and the best I can tell, the majority of people in the country want that. But it's a fight in the government. There's incongruence in the percentage of the government officials and the people. So we are having and involved in a revolution. 1776. There were two attitudes that were on the table. And the one attitude was the attitude of George Washington, Alexander Hamilton, and John Adams. The other attitude is represented in the work of Thomas Jefferson and James Madison. And they were different. And they were vehemently different. As a matter of fact, when Jefferson won the presidency, and some historians say that was the second revolution. The Hamilton and Adams group, they were strong Federalists. Whenever you hear somebody reading from the Federalist Papers, did you ever hear that on CNN or something? Well, in the Federalist Papers, we read this. And for a moment in time, I thought, oh, man, that must be the Word of God. You know, they're reading from the Federalist Papers. That's important. Well, the other side of that is, well, what was Jefferson or what was Madison's response to what was written in the Federalist Papers? Because the Federalist Papers were representing a particular view of the Federalist. Not representing the whole country, so to take that as gospel is problematic. So we should ask the question when somebody says that, what was Jefferson and what was Madison saying? Adams and Washington and Hamilton wanted a strong federal government. They weren't necessarily concerned with all of the people having a vote in this democracy. It was a limited democracy with a strong federal government with the central bank. Did anybody see that headline recently that Goldman Sachs has been manipulating every market movement since World War II? And that Goldman Sachs has produced since Jimmy Carter, I believe, Secretary of Treasury? Is that right? Is that a central bank? I don't know. But anyway, maybe that group should be the Federalist Party today, because maybe that is the central bank. Now, Jefferson and Madison said no to that. We want a party of the people, all of the people, to participate. It's interesting. In one of Jefferson's letters, he says that what is important is that we are able to feed ourselves as citizens. I got to thinking about that. And how come that's important? We have just a fact talking about food and feed ourselves. What would happen today if there wasn't enough gas for trucks? Anyway, and I'd like to read a bit from some of Jefferson's letters so you can get a flavor of that, because today I don't think we hear much. Well, if I had those here, we'd read them. Okay, I don't think we hear much of Jefferson's perspective today. He would write things such as, we need the freedom of speech. We need religious tolerance. We need these things. He would also say, we need to be protected from monopolies. We need to be able to have a free enterprise system protected from monopolies. And I thought, how does he know about that? Why is that important to him? Well, again, the John Company. Why did that not make it into our civil liberties? And he writes in there, we need these civil liberties for the citizens to protect themselves against the federal government. Now, why would that even be in there, that he would have the thought we would need protection against the federal government? He would write something like, any right that can be taken away from you is no right at all. And over the past decade, how many of us have literally had fear, anxiety, or fought for our rights not being taken away from us? He says, if they can take it away, it's no right at all. If they can take it away, it's have no right at all. Why did we need these rights anyway? If we fight for our rights, our independence, if we fight to maintain that periodically in our lives, or when something of our interest comes up, and so we get energized, and we go march and we go fight, or we'll talk to our neighbors about it, or we can feel an energy inside of us, or we yell at the television, or whatever we might do when we hear that. But then when something of our interest isn't there, then we go back to the bowling league and go back to the pool. You go back to whatever it is we do because we're not fired up. Then what has happened at that particular point, we have fallen prey to being locked into the single process of what it means to be a people. We are not aware of the double process of what it means to be a free people. The double process is, like Jefferson was trying to point out, is not only do we have to deal with the here and now and the particular event of the day, we have to keep our eyes and we have to keep our ears on the ideal. We have to make sure that is being protected as well, that the civil liberties are being protected as we go through time as well, so that not just when my issue that I like, that I have energy and is being dealt with, do I have energy. He's saying our citizenship, we've got to be participating all the time. That's the process. That's the process of that second part of forgiveness that goes on. When you're taking care of your life all the time and you're attending to yourself all the time, forgiveness just dissipates and it's no longer an issue. It's the same thing with the political process and the community process. When we're taking in, we're aware of the whole process, the smaller pieces will take care of itself. I will always remember the day when I was reading the energy bill that was passed under Bush. Whether I liked it or not, that wasn't the issue at that point. But in the energy bill, they repealed the Public Utilities Holding Act. And I don't know if you know what the Public Utilities Holding Act was, but in the 1920s and 30s, the energy companies were adjusting their rates and really manipulating the energy market to rake in money and abusing their status because they were a monopoly, they were power because they were energy companies. And Franklin Delano Roosevelt said, enough. Enough. We're going to put this legislation in that any energy company has to be regulated by the state. And you can't own energy companies from state to state to state to state to state. You have to be contained within the state. So that when that law was repealed, I thought nobody told me about it. I didn't know about it. Because I wasn't paying attention. That's why what was going on with me. I wasn't paying attention. Somebody was paying attention. Because it certainly was repealed. And as a result of its repealing, Enron could do what it did. So it did have an effect. What happens in a revolution is that we create a space in which we can have a voice. We create a time in which we can speak. We can have a voice. There is a freedom. If we're under tyranny or our minds are being manipulated and we're going along through time and I'm not paying attention, then really, I'm not in charge of my own space and time. Somebody else is occupying my space and time because I'm not feeding my own space and time. What a revolution does is a revolution says, get this off of me. That's what a revolution says. It's an overthrowing. Get this off of me so I can breathe once again. But in that breathing, we have space. And we need to protect that space. If we don't protect that space, something else will come back and get on us. You can be guaranteed that. And we know that by looking at history. We need to pay attention. As Unitarian Universalists, these aren't political issues. This is our faith tradition. The issues of separation of church and state, the issues of religious tolerance, religious freedom, these weren't political issues for us. These were the birth of our religious community. So this just isn't about being active politically for Unitarian Universalists. This is about being active in our faith tradition. And today, on the celebration of this Independence Day, let us breathe deep as Unitarian Universalists. Let us know it is our faith heritage that's intertwined into history that has produced civil liberties, the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution of this country. And feel good about it. Because as long as that is in place, we will have freedom. If it is not, we will not. So as we're active in our faith and in our communities, let us protect these rights. And let us celebrate and know that our faith tradition is the foundation of this country. And let's feel good about it and own it. But always remember, it's a two-process system. And we have to pay attention to that other process as well. Happy Independence.